You are listening to the audio-only portion of the KoopaCast. To watch the video version, please check out purenintendo.com/KoopaCast. The intro and outro music of our KoopaCast is brought to you by the artist Big Giant Circles, who has composed for projects such as Mass Effect 2, Super Street Fighter 2 HD Remix, and Borderlands 2. Our opening song is Houston, and our closing song is A Rose in the Field, both from the album Glory Days. To listen to more of Big Giant Circles' work, go to music.biggiantcircles.com to see his entire collection of video game remixes and soundtracks. You can also find his collection on iTunes. Again, that website is music.biggiantcircles.com. Everyone, it's a podcast. Welcome to KoopaCast number 54, titled In My Defense. We titled it so because we will be trying to defend a game that we thought was good that everyone else thought was awful. I'm your host this time around, Matt Paxton. I am the multimedia manager here at PNM and PureNintendo.com, your independent source for all things Nintendo. I have two other Justins joining me. And I will point to Justin J. Money, and he will talk about what he does, and then we'll move on to the next Justin.
Oh, you're not going to start?
I already did. I already introduced myself.
Oh, okay.
Off to a great start.
All right, well, the game that I guess I'm going to defend is Aladdin, which I played on the Genesis, but also released on, I believe, Super Nintendo. And I guess a lot of people thought that this version was really crappy. And when I played it when I was younger, I always thought it was kind of a hard platforming game. But a lot of people, I guess, attribute that to that version sucking. So I don't know. I enjoyed it because it was so difficult. Whether that's why, like, there's something wrong with the game, so it made it difficult. I don't know. But that's why I enjoyed playing it so much when I was younger, is because I found it so challenging to play. I don't necessarily know what else to say, because I enjoyed it for the reason everybody else hated it.
You enjoyed the challenge?
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of what really kind of formed me as, what I guess I see myself as a gamer today. I enjoy extremely difficult games, and I think a lot of that stems from my experience with that, you know, with that game when I was younger, because I think that was the first game I ever played where it really pushed me to Hey, now we have two Justins.
Yep. I want to introduce our extra special guest, Justin Sharp, too.
Sorry.
It's all good.
Yeah. Now you have to defend two games.
So I don't know if either one of you have played Aladdin, but
I have.
You have?
Mm-hmm. I played, you said you played the Genesis one?
Yes.
Yeah, I played the Genesis one too. I played the Super Nintendo one as well, I think. But I agree. I always liked the Genesis one better. I don't know what it was about it, but I like it.
The music, maybe?
Yeah, like there was something better about it. I don't know if the graphics were a little bit better on the Genesis, maybe not. But first experience, yeah.
And I guess it's kind of weird for me to kind of defend the game because I never played the Super Nintendo version, so I really don't know what differed between the two.
Mm-hmm. I think the only real difference that you, I mean, there's level layouts, but there's all, but the, you know, platforming and stuff is the same, I think. Yeah. Your version had a sword, though, and I don't think the SNES version did. I think you just had to jump on people, like, Mario style.
Yeah. And then you mentioned like some of the platforming being off, but you know, I wonder if that's just a product of like the Genesis controller versus the Super Nintendo controller. Because like Super Nintendo controller is awesome, like it was always really responsive, but.
And then I think the only other difference after that is the SNES version had like a cave run where it was like mode 7.
Oh,
So
yeah.
like everything, things were coming at you really fast, but like in like the 3D kind of thing. And I remember that being like the worst, like the absolute worst.
No.
Was just moving too fast and I couldn't keep up. I think I had to use like a code to get out of there.
I think that was another thing that they included in the I don't know if it was in the SNES version also, but in the Genesis one, I can remember it had like a, I think it was like a almost like a Contra code sort of thing, where it was like ABBA, you know, start or something like that. And I used that to get past several stages because I was like, this is too hard.
So wait. So let me back up. You're defending this game because other people say it's too hard, and you say, "But yeah, I like hard games." But you had to cheat to get past them because they were too hard?
No, I think other people said it was too hard because there was something with the platforming or something that wasn't quite right. But that's what I enjoyed about the game. The game was so difficult. But there, I do admit that there were stages I had to skip with the code because they were too difficult.
Sounds like you need to go back and play it and come back with us next week with some notes.
Oh, maybe I should.
What's your take on that,
And
though?
this is probably going to be really embarrassing. Almost like 15 years since I played it last. Maybe more than
Well,
that,
hopefully your skills have not rusted at all.
I
Justin, do you have anything to add to
don't
J Money's defense?
know. I think that's a good game to mention, and yeah, I like it myself.
Yeah. You know, I'm kind of mixed. I think nostalgia is blocking a lot of it. From what I remember when I've seen videos, it's at the time where hitboxes weren't quite hitboxes, and sometimes you swing and it wouldn't hit them. You
Yeah.
think the game was cheating?
Know, I think I do remember a few of those moments now that you mention it.
I do remember the graphics and like the animations being fairly good. Like, you know, like busting open the, you know, the, like, get, didn't you get some fruit and stuff?
You got like apples, I think.
Yeah, apples and things. And I remember like the graphics being very sharp looking, you know, very saturated, fun colors, and animations being good. But I think it kind of stuck out in a lot of the other Super Nintendo games, especially like the non-Nintendo, you know, first party games. Nintendo games have always been very colorful and very distinctive, but it was one of the few examples, you know, of a nicer. I mean, granted, there are a lot of third party gems on the SNES too. A lot of RPGs that come to mind.
And another thing to keep in mind is that this is still a licensed game, you know. And then, I mean, people think licensed game now, and they're like, "Ugh, that means it's crap," because you know they had to build it. The studio had to build it in like 6 weeks and push it out during the movie to come out, you know. And that doesn't always re lead to the best results. But like in the SNES era, sometimes you got really crappy, really crappy licensed games. But sometimes you got really good licensed games.
I do have to say that Aladdin's probably one of the few movie-related titles that I've ever enjoyed playing. Nowadays, when I hear that there's a movie tie-in, you know, game or whatever, I'm like, oh boy, do not buy that game.
All right. So what's our verdict on Aladdin for the Genesis slash SNES?
Well, what's the verdict? Like, play or do not play, or.
Do we think it's good? Do we think it's not good? You obviously think it's good because you came in here with the pride in the lab. Justin, were you convinced that this is a good game?
I mean, it may be nostalgia glasses, but I thought it was good.
It's quite possible too that if I played it today, I might go, "Oh man, what was I thinking?"
I'm not having you represent me in any kind of court.
I'd have to play it again, really. I'm sure I might feel maybe a little different about it if I played it now compared, because things are different now. And it's not, I don't feel that it's probably going to be like a Nintendo title. Like, you can play an NES Mario game now and be like, "Man, this is amazing," and still like get a ton of enjoyment out of it. So if I were to play it now, I might, like, I don't quite know what I got out of this when I was younger.
Could be when you were a kid and you just didn't know any better.
It could be. We didn't have all those high-end graphics and stuff back in the day, so.
Back then, we only had seven modes. Oh, man. All right. So let's move away from J Money's defense into Justin Sharp's defense. So without further ado, Justin, what game will you be defending for us?
All right, well, this may be a controversial one, but I loved it. I played it recently too, so I still have some context with playing it recently. But the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on the NES. Are you?
Wow, you really went for it. Okay.
When you mentioned trying to defend a game that not many people liked, I was having a hard time finding a game that I liked that not many people wouldn't like, or was kind of an oddball. But most of the games I like are kind of, like Mario Kart, Smash Brothers, Zeldas. Most people like those, so it's hard to defend a game that people are like, "Well, yeah, it's good," but the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles gets a lot of flack. I think Angry Video Game Nerd even did a whole thing on it where he said how the game was, cheating, or like there's a lot of times where like the collision detection is, suspect, and there's that one jump in that one room that you can never quite get over. Okay, I'm supposed to defend it. Hold on, hold on.
Yeah. Doing a great job so far.
Yeah. But so yeah, so the things that I liked about it, the music was awesome. Game. I always thought the music in that, I mean, I can still just hear it clearly in my mind. Love the music in the game. I liked how they transition between like the side-scrolling gameplay when you're in the sewers, and then you kind of had like the little top-down viewpoint when you're walking around the city. There's not a whole lot you can do when you're walking around in the city except avoid getting run over, but the gameplay was fairly good, and there's a lot of levels to the game, lots of cool bosses. A lot of people think that the dam level was pretty frustrating, where you have to disarm all the bombs. But I always thought it was like a fun challenge, and I remember my brothers would stop playing the game because they're like, "Oh, this game's too hard." And me being the youngest, I was like, "Oh, this is just a challenge. I'll figure it out." So like getting past the dam level and, moving on in the game was, a cool accomplishment back then. But anyway, so I guess I like the challenge of it. I never felt that it was, overly like broken, like challenging to the point that it was broken. I felt like, it's just kind of a quirky game. But I like the ability to switch out the turtle characters. That's something I really didn't use until later on when I played the game. But you can switch out your character whenever you want, so it helps kind of instead of actually having lives, you just kind of switch out. If Raphael's getting low, you switch over to Donatello or somebody else until you find a pizza, then swap back and you can replenish your life. So I don't know. I thought the game was interesting and fun, but I know it's widely panned. So,
Now, did you beat it?
yes, I have beaten it.
Okay. See, I remember that game, and yeah, it was definitely infamous NES difficulty.
I think it's a very satisfying game to beat. Like, not in the sense like, oh, I can't believe I finally beat this stupid game that cheats, you know. I thought it was, you know, a decent boss battle in the end with Shredder, and some of the levels, you know, leading up to that last battle can be frustrating, like where you have all the conveyor belts and things. The platforming can become even more challenging at that point. But anyway, I thought so.
Nice. Now, have you beaten it lately, though? Like, have you come back as an adult?
I haven't beaten it lately. I did download it. I think it came out on the Wii Virtual Console. So I have it on there. I haven't played it since I got the Wii U, so it's been, you know, 3 or 4 years. But I played through probably to the airport area, I think.
Okay. Jeremy, you got anything? Any kind of revival here?
Well, I didn't play the Nintendo Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I played TMNT Arcade for the
Like
SNES.
Turtles in Time and all that.
Right. And
That's so good. So good.
I really liked those. I played those for hours with my friends.
Yeah, the first Turtles game on the NES is kind of infamous because it is kind of the black sheep of the bunch, because Turtles 2, the second one, kind of went to that Turtles in Time formula.
It
So
wouldn't have
Turtles 2, 3, and 4 were all very similar gameplay-wise.
But yeah, the first one was like, what would you describe it as? Just classic platformer?
Yeah, it's like a platformer. Yeah, I guess platformer adventure game.
Action platformer maybe?
Yeah.
Because the other ones I remember being more of like brawlers, where like you just had these waves of enemies that you had to be.
Yeah. All of the subsequent Turtles games have been like Double Dragon games. You know, where you're
Yeah.
kind of scrolling brawler games.
And
Which
that's what that
have
was,
been
yeah.
really fun. I think that was a good switch, but I do have a special place in my heart, I guess, for the first one. Maybe it is partly nostalgia, just because it was like one of the first, you know, good challenging games that I beat. Like even, you know, like Zelda was a lot easier in comparison, I think. Like if you go back and try and play it, it's a very challenging game. And it'll probably frustrate most people to go back to it. But if you stick with it, I think it's a worthwhile game.
Well, and seeing how I'm used to, or that I look back on, you know, the brawler style game, I'm kind of like, I'm kind of curious how it would work,
Yeah,
platformer.
you might feel a little stymied by the gameplay.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, the NES games aren't forgiving in the first place, and the fact that you said that it's that the first Legend of Zelda is way easier kind of concerns me a little bit.
Yeah. See, I remember beating like the original Zelda quite a bit when I was younger. But yeah, like I would always go back to Turtles because it's like, I gotta beat this thing. You know. So it was one of those ones you had to try quite a bit. But what was interesting, even back in the day, I never really utilized the character swapping effectively. And if you do that was something I really didn't, you know, learn about it till later on. If you do that, it makes the game a lot easier.
See, that's interesting because I've never heard anybody ever mention character swapping when they bring up that game.
Yeah,
And
and that's kind of like the key point. If you can do the character swapping, the game becomes tremendous. A lot easier. It's still difficult, but what I would do when I first played the game, I would play till the character died, right?
right.
You play till Raph died, and then you're like, okay, I'll play as Leonardo now. And you play till Leonardo died, and then so you're basically just exhausting all of them. You know, whereas if you moderate it, you play till their life is getting low, swap out another character, and then just if you find a pizza slice or something like that. Swap in the other character, and then you can refill their health.
Nice.
Makes it a lot easier.
Smart gameplay right there.
Yeah.
And I should have asked Jay Money this, but it just kind of came to me. Mm-hmm. We're all game reviewers, right? We all review games.
Mm-hmm.
So what score would you give your game that you defended?
Oh, goodness gracious. I don't know, because I haven't played it so long. I would say that I would probably give it I'm going to say this first.
Okay.
With nostalgia glasses on, I'm going to say I'd probably give it a 7. But if I played it again, the score would probably be a little bit lower than that.
All right. It's totally fine to have nostalgia glasses. We're not officially reviewing these games. So 7. So, you know, Aladdin will get a 7 out of 10. Justin, what are you going to give the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for the entertainment system?
With nostalgia glasses on, I would score it higher. I'd probably give it an 8. Because I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the music and everything. One of those fun games I played with NES. But I guess if I was being more objective with it, it would probably be like a 6 or something.
A 6, eh? Okay. Nice. Not bad. All right. J-Money, do you agree with this score?
Well, without playing the game, it's hard for me to say. And I'm kind of a little biased because I'm like a huge TMNT fan, so I'd probably enjoy it even if it was bad. I've been a Turtles fan since I was a very young child, so even some of the movies where people are like, oh, that was a terrible movie, I'm like, what are you talking about? Those are awesome.
I'm guessing you've seen every Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, huh?
Yeah.
Even the Michael Bay one?
What's that?
Even the Michael Bay one?
I haven't had a chance to see that one yet, but as soon as I'm able to get it on Netflix, I'm going to watch it.
Nice. So people can look forward to that podcast where Jay Money defends the Michael Bay Turtle movie.
Nice.
I enjoyed hearing the swapping out. That feels like a revelation for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and if it ever comes out on the Wii U Virtual Console, I think I'll pick it up. And then I'll also pick up Aladdin, too, and see how that works out. And then I'll come back, and it'll be like podcast like 140, and I'll just come back randomly and say, I played those games, here's my score, and just start. I've written down every argument, so I'm just going to counter-argue. I hope you all have a good memory.
All of a sudden, you're going to start going off on this tangent where and be like, what are you talking about?
I don't understand why they couldn't put the sword in the SNES version. What are you talking about? We're talking about the newest Legend of Zelda. He has a sword. All right. So I guess the time has come for me to defend my...
Yes, what did you pick, Matt?
I went the route that you guys took where I like looked at the earlier games. Because those are the games that you'll see, like, you know, the standards weren't always there. You get some gems, you got your Mario Worlds and stuff like that, but then you also get, like, just god-awful games that make no sense, or they're just too hard, or, you know they put them together within, like, a week. Yeah. So I was looking, and I picked this up, and I'm like, nope, not that one, sorry. And then I'm like, huh, maybe Mischief Makers. No, people like that game. I like that game. I have good tastes. But there was one game that I remembered that just hit me looking through my mass collection of games, and it's not a nostalgia game at all. It came out in 2008.
Ooh.
And it's a Wii game. And
oh, boy.
I think it had...
Skyward Sword. It's Skyward Sword, isn't it?
No. I'm smarter. I'm better than that.
Okay, good.
Is it Red Steel?
No, it's not Red Steel. I want to play Red Steel. But it's a game that came out in 2008. Oh, but sorry. Before we go on to Red Steel, that could have been Justin's defense, because they played Red Steel 2 for a charity marathon like 2 years ago.
Yeah. I didn't even think about it. Like, I was thinking of, like, Wii U games, and then, like, I just started, I went all the way back, and MNT popped into my head. I was like, oh, yeah.
Red Steel 2, though, like the original release of Red Steel, people didn't like too much, but it seemed like Red Steel 2 kind of improved on the previous title, so.
Yeah. It benefited from the motion plus for sure.
Right.
Maybe
Anyways.
here we go. So, this is actually not only a Wii game, but it's a first-party Wii game.
Really?
Nintendo created it, and you know when the Wii came out, we all really knew that Nintendo likes to branch out in just odd directions and really try new things. And they really want to do, you know, go beyond video games. They want to get as many people involved as possible, and they want to like, you know, use video games to help people. And this is one of their projects. It's a little bit out there. And you know, it wasn't marketed the best,
Curious man.
you know, and they were really enthusiastic, so I was enthusiastic for them. But their marketing mistake was the worst, especially when they came out with the infamous DJ Rabidum scene. We all saw him come out and
Oh boy.
play some virtual drums while Miyamoto played on his virtual flute for, of course, Wii Music. And that's what I'm defending right now.
Are you about to play the
Now, let me explain why, you know, Wii Music is my defense game. I know you guys are looking at me like I'm crazy. I'm not talking about you guys. I can see you guys. I'm talking about the people at home that I can't see. I know you're looking at me like I'm crazy. So, you know, this was a game that was kind of meant to get people into music. Like, it's not for people like us who are like longtime veterans of games and who are in our 20s and beyond. You know, this isn't our kind of game. This is the kind of game to get, like, if you have kids and you want to get them into music, but you know, you don't want them to be frustrated by it. This would be this game right here. And they have 50 songs in there to check out, and you can play a bunch of different instruments. Not all the instruments are one to one. You're not going to be playing a trumpet by hitting the one and two button. You know, you're not going to be playing a harp like you're playing the piano. But it does teach you valuable things like chords and pitches and harmonies and rhythm. And it teaches those basics, and it kind of builds upon them. So, you know, if you want to learn more, you just, you know, you hop on Wii Music and you check it out. And it's really involving for people who, you know, who really want to know the basics of music. I know when I picked it up, I actually had a blast. They have like a conducting section. All the songs are in 4/4 time, so you're fine with that. They're all orchestrated, so they have like Carmen in there. They have the Four Seasons, Vivaldi's Four Seasons, Spring, and then they have some other stuff. They have the theme from Legend of Zelda, and that's all orchestrated. And you can, you know, you do this, and depending on how hard you conduct or how low, that, you know, that controls like tempo and how loud they're playing. And you know, yeah, again, it's really involving. Now, I will say that there are terrible things about it. Again, the you're not playing a trumpet like this. Not at all. You know, you're not playing a guitar like this. You're not playing a violin like this. This is not how you hold a violin. That's wrong. But, you know, again, it's a good start. So, like, if I was a teacher in like an elementary school, I'd be like, God, I need to get these kids on music. I'm not going to give them a recorder because that's just punishing for everybody. Nobody likes that. They need to break all the recorders because that's not a real instrument. But I would absolutely boot this game up and teach them things. Be like, all right, here's a minor chord, here's a major chord. And they even go a little bit farther with that. They're like, okay, say you want to like score a tense situation, you want to use minor chords, or you want to use harmonic chords for like an uplifting situation, you know. It's got that stuff in there, and you know, it's really, really solid on their like their fundamentals and their basics. But yeah, again, us wouldn't touch it. I wouldn't recommend it for you either of you. I'd recommend it for like Like James just had a James has a son.
Mm-hmm. Well,
he's only 6 weeks, but you know, hand him the Wii remote. Let's get him to go.
Yeah.
I will say the most. They did try one thing to be very accurate, like a more of a one-to-one thing, and that's called drum lesson. And if you have like the Wii Fit Board and the nunchuck and the Wii remote, you know, they'll sit you in front of like a virtual drum set, and they'll kind of teach you how to coordinate your arms and your legs to like do kick drums while you're doing like hi-hats and like snares. And they're very basic, but then they build up to like different styles. So it's got a pretty good curve to it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, you can unlock more the more you get involved, so that encourages more people to get involved. So I'm defending this game not because it's a solid piece of software, which it's not by any means, but because it's a really great foundational piece of software for people who want to introduce other people into music and, you know, and playing and stuff.
Man. I agree. It's good.
I would agree that it's maybe not for a more advanced video game player, and that a child would probably enjoy it more than somebody who's been playing video games for a while.
Mm-hmm.
As far as not being frustrating, I don't know if I can agree with that, because when I played it, I found it extremely frustrating. It does teach some good concepts. I do agree there that it does teach some good musical concepts. But as far as using the instruments and stuff, sometimes I thought that the motion controls got in the way in some aspects, because like you'd move when you didn't intend to, and it would kind of throw you off a little bit or whatever. I don't trade in games very often. I tend to keep games and collect them because I like to have that collection. And this is one game where I said, I can't keep this. I got to trade this in. It's not worth keeping. but I think it'd be a good child's game. And if you want them to introduce them into music, it's probably a good place to start, rather than spending, you know, hundreds of dollars on a musical instrument and finding out the kid has no interest.
Mm-hmm.
I completely agree. Yeah, like, my biggest thing is just, like, I do stand with Nintendo, like, with them doing things that are just, like, they go beyond just, you know, simple entertainment. You know, having video games serve, like, other uses, like the public good or something like that, which I think this game kind of serves, like, this and, like, Wii Fit and Wii Sports. I think those are the ones that I really enjoy for reasons other than it's just, you know, a fun game.
Well, I think that another issue with the Wii Music game is that Nintendo games already are kind of like a niche like they have their own niche. And then Wii Music is even a product for a small group within that niche, so it kind of like really narrows down your audience.
Mm-hmm.
When most of their products cater to any, you know, video any person who plays video games, but then this is I think it just didn't sell like they expected to because of the audience they're trying to target with it.
Mm-hmm.
I do have the sales numbers if you'd like to hear them.
Oh, right. Man, he really did his research.
It is total worldwide sales between 2008 and 2009 is 2.65 million copies worldwide.
So it's not terrible. Not great,
mm-hmm.
but not terrible either.
No. Could have been a lot worse, but I mean, granted, it is a product of, you know, what, 140 million Wiis or something like that, I think.
Yeah, one of the best-selling consoles in history.
Yeah, a small percentage of that, but still respectable numbers.
I agree with that. I will say, you know, I defended a lot of this game, but after this podcast, it's probably going to go back to collecting dust.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You mean you didn't play that recently?
Actually, I did. I spent the afternoon playing Wii Fit music in preparation for this podcast.
After cleaning the inch of dust that was on it, and
absolutely, yeah, you know, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it.
Pulled it out of the box.
I almost completely forgot about this game. I was ready to do Arrow the Acrobat, but it was like, I looked at my case. I'm like, oh man, let's try something really difficult.
Wow.
I pulled it out and I found merits. And I'm sticking with them.
Nice.
Yeah, when you were mentioning a Wii game, you know, suddenly I thought of Skyward Sword, which is not like, I think it's a game, it's a high-profile game that people love to hate, you know, because I think it kind of epitomizes, you know, the height of Nintendo's obsession with motion controls during the Wii's lifespan. And a lot of people didn't like it. A lot of people didn't like the motion controls. They, you know, for whatever reason, they say, oh, it's a mistake, whatever. They changed gaming for the worse, whatever. But Skyward Sword was, I mean, it was built around the motion controls. So if you don't understand the motion controls and you don't appreciate them, you're not going to like it, you know. And you're not going to be good at it either. If you take the time to actually, you know, play the game, you know, use the motion correctly, it's accurate. It's very accurate. You know, you rarely have to do any calibration at all. The people that have the problems are the ones that, you know, don't take the time. So.
Well, I wasn't going to bring up Skyward Sword, but you seem so keen on pressing the issue.
Yes.
I demand we talk about it.
Fine. Here we go. So it sounds like you're changing your game to officially Skyward Sword.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I'll say. Okay, here we go. TV off. This is serious time. Right? Okay, here are my problems with Skyward Sword. None of it was the motion controls. Yes, there were problems. But that could have been my, you know, hardware too sometimes. Because I have the old Wii Motion Plus, which is you have to attach it to the Wii remote.
Uh-huh.
So that could have been that.
Yeah.
But that's not my problem with Skyward Sword. My problem with Skyward Sword lies in how easy it was, how linear it was, and I want to say because Fee wouldn't shut up, but she's taking up a larger problem of people not shutting up and telling me the obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that, like in the, yeah, Fee or Fi or whatever.
Oh, yeah, it's Fi now.
Yeah, Fi, she, I mean, I never thought she was more annoying than Navi was, you know, so.
But at least, here, no, Navi, she said what she had to say. She bothered you, but she said it, and she got out of there.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
She got bored with needless calculations based on no data that she has. I guarantee she pulled all of those statistics out of her sword.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I really like Skyward Sword because the boss battles, for one. The dungeons were really cool, too. And I could see the linear complaint, but, you know, almost every Zelda game the last three or four have been fairly linear. Even Skyward Sword, I mean, Twilight Princess was fairly linear. So I don't know that's like a unique gripe against Skyward Sword. I would say more legitimate gripes would possibly be like the long hand-holding and intro sequence at the beginning.
Yeah, but then we'd bring up Twilight Princess in that category because they were the first offender.
Yeah, yeah.
Extremely logical.
So again, it's not a unique gripe on Skyward Sword. The things that I like, I mean, what are the unique aspects about Skyward Sword? The motion controls.
They were the first Legend of Zelda game to feature a fully orchestrated soundtrack.
Yep, see?
Which I appreciate. Skyward Sword was one of my favorite soundtracks.
Yeah.
I will say that, absolutely.
Yeah. Another element that I did like was the addition of the customizations of the items, where, you know, you got these little, you know, ore, you know, whatever these things you gathered as you went along, and you could upgrade, like, the beetle or the, you know, all these different things. I thought that was a cool element, you know, because instead of them having to create, like, 10 or, you know, 6 or 8 unique items you're getting through the game. You know, instead they're having, you know, 4 or 5, and then there's like unique abilities that get added on. So I liked some of that, and like I thought the collecting was more enjoyable, like the bug collecting and all that stuff. You know, and forging the different items and things like that as you went. So I liked some of those aspects, and those were, you know, newer elements to Skyward Sword than past games. Twilight Princess, you could catch the bug, but it wasn't like, you know, a super integral thing.
Yeah, but it did fill up your wallet pretty fast.
Yeah, it was kind of like the, you know, like chasing around the pose and
Ocarina.
yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I don't know. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. So you talked about boss fights. The boss fights were great.
Yes.
Some of the boss fights were great, but some were terrible.
Which
And
one?
one was really terrible, but they felt the need to repeat that 3 times.
Oh, yes, the
Prison fight. We all know the prison fight. Cutting his toes, but he's shooting shockwaves at us. And
yeah.
then, oh my goodness. And there wasn't anything like too new in each of those fights. It's just that like the third fight had the Grucinator, and that was like the most exciting part of the entire, like, of all 3 fights. But they could consolidated that into one fight and made other content.
Yeah, I did think it was a little shallow on the content. You know, when you compare it with Twilight Princess had a lot of dungeons and a lot of variety in their dungeons. You know, I probably my favorite dungeon in the game is the cistern. What do they call it? I forget the first word. Something
I thought
cistern.
it was ancient cistern, right?
Ancient cistern. Yeah. And like the boss in that was awesome too.
That was one of the favorite my favorite boss fights ever, because it was just so satisfying to hammer away at that guy.
Oh yeah. And so maybe I just remember like that one boss fight and that one dungeon. I'm like, ah, everything else is amazing.
Yeah, you forget about like the 4 Ghirahim fights and the 3 Imprisoned fights.
Yeah, that's true. You do fight Ghirahim a lot. And you know, like I can see how people could get turned off with the game pretty quick in that very first Ghirahim fight. If you don't understand what you're supposed to do, it could be a very frustrating fight. You could feel like the motion controls aren't working at all, because if you guys are familiar, you know, if you swing, just keep swinging at him. He's going to grab the tip of your sword and he just holds it.
Or he throws it away.
Yeah, or he throws it to the side, and the only way you can get it, you know, detached from his hand, from his grip, is to like pull back, you know, pull the sword back like that, pull the Wii remote. So, you know, one thing that I learned later on in the game, you know, is just doing a little bit more. Well, I guess I had the benefit of playing the E3 demo first. And I did the same sort of thing in that E3 demo, whereas I kept getting the sword, you know, grabbed by Ghirahim. I was like, what in the world? How do I hit him? You know? But when I finally got the game, the full game, you know, I was able to kind of like, you know, trick him, kind of like, you know, Ganondorf with the fishing rod.
Right.
You guys remember that trick? You can kind of like, you know, attract his attention away and then slash at him with the sword, you know, when he's open. And that's basically the whole strategy with Ghirahim. You kind of move your sword over, get it so his hand isn't in front of him, and then you can slash from a different angle and, you know, get him pretty easily. And then the fight becomes very easy at that point. But I did like the depth of not just the bosses, but the just general enemy encounters. Instead of having to just kind of like waggle, you know, to get rid of enemies like in Twilight Princess, you know, you had, actually had to like, you know, think about where you were swinging next, especially with some of the Stalfos later on had like 4 swords.
Yeah.
So you eventually had to do like an actual jab to get in between there instead of doing, you know, up, down, left, right slices. So I liked some of the depth that they added to the enemies, and I liked the bosses in general. They were not your standard Zelda boss battles in the sense of, oh, I need to hit them 3 times and they're done, right? You know, in Skyward Sword, you hit them lots of times. Like in the Ancient Cistern battle, you're hitting, you know, Kalokdos or whatever his name is,
Yeah, that's right.
you know, several times. And I don't think he even has like three stages either. He's got several different stages as you go. I mean, there's like two distinct ones. But there's just a lot of variety to the battles rather than just, you know, like one example is Ocarina of Time, the King Dodongo. I mean, you throw three bombs in him and he's gone, you know.
Right.
And it's the same cycle each time. So I like some of the depth that they have with the boss battles.
And wasn't the graphics, like the graphical style they used, or the art style, I guess, is a better word. Wasn't that something that people were kind of upset over during, or initially when they showed it off?
Probably.
Probably. Like, it's kind of funny, with most Zelda games, the current Zelda game is the Black Sheep. And whatever the previous Zelda game becomes like the best Zelda game ever.
Because Wind Waker was easily three Zeldas ago, and I think that's the best Zelda game ever.
Yeah, but I mean, when Wind Waker first came out, it was kind of a mixed bag. Now, granted, critics, you know, gave it its fair share. You know, a lot of the critics said, "Hey, this is a really good Zelda game. You need to get it." But you know, fans, you know, didn't really like it when it first came out.
Well,
and when Twilight Princess came out, you know, Twilight Princess was kind of panned, and they're like, "Oh, Wind Waker, that's amazing! Oh, I've been playing Wind Waker lately." Same sort of thing. It goes in waves.
Well, and I think that's Wind Waker is almost kind of where people started to kind of dog on graphical styles when they say this is what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
And it kind of like all started with Wind Waker. They're like, what are they doing to Zelda?
Yeah.
And like ever since then, whenever they show off a new Zelda, they're just like, oh my gosh, what are they doing?
Yeah, they should never have shown off that Space World trailer.
The first thing I thought of was that Space World trailer.
Yeah.
Talking about what Wind Waker should look like.
Yeah, because I mean, really, from Ocarina of Time, you know, from going from that, I mean, the 64 was fairly blocky in comparison to GameCube games. So if people were just comparing Ocarina of Time to Wind Waker, you know, it's a pretty big graphical leap, even with the art style, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But since people saw that Space World demo that showed a realistic looking, you know, Link and a realistic looking Ganondorf fighting, you know, that kind of, and then you show in one, you show the Wind Waker completely changed. So, anyway,
it'll be interesting to see what people think, because it seems like they're going more open world with the new Zelda game. Interesting to see how people feel from it going from a more linear approach to kind of a, like more do what you want sort of thing.
Yeah, they're definitely changing more with this new one. Now, granted, the art style is very similar to Skyward Sword and Wind Waker as far as cell shading, and, you know.
Well,
probably more close to Wind Waker cell shading than the pastel look.
Well, when they showed off the scene they did at E3, it kind of reminded me a mix of almost like Twilight Princess and a more cell-shaded approach.
Right.
Like, they're kind of trying to make it a little more realistic, but more colorful at the same time.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of an in-between. I mean, it's obviously not as simplistic as the Wind Waker style.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got more, yeah, colors, like you said, like with Wind Waker. That's why I lean it more towards Wind Waker, just in the coloring and the self-shaded look of it, even though it's more realistic looking.
All right. So I hate to pull us away from this Skyward Sword debate.
we are
nearing the end of the podcast, and before we finish up, we do have a reader question that came in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
By Josh. I'm not going to say his last name because this is off of Facebook, and you know, I don't know if he feels comfortable with that, so we're just going to call him Josh. So thank you, Josh, for submitting your question. Josh writes in, and he wants to know what we think of crossovers in indie games, and are they good or bad? And crossovers here being like, you know, just as an example, this isn't real, Like, say Shantae all of a sudden appears in Mighty Number 9 or something.
I think that I like the fact that indie developers are working together to kind of support each other. And this is kind of a unique way of doing so. Like, hey, we've got a character from this other indie game in our game. So it kind of not only attracts attention to your own game, but also another game within the indie gaming community. So I think it's kind of neat in that aspect. I don't necessarily like the fact... I wouldn't like a crossover being used to increase content in a game. Like, I don't necessarily know how I feel about having levels based on other indie games. I know that's kind of conflicting from my first statement, but you should really kind of develop your own content. But if you want to add little extras like playable characters or whatnot, I think that's kind of interesting, if that makes any sense.
No, I understand what you're saying. You're saying, like, don't use crossovers as, like, a crutch to pad content into your own game.
Right.
Like, create your own game, and then if you want, you can put in crossover stuff later.
Right.
You know, I completely agree with that. I do agree that, you know, it's a good way for people to, like, or for indies to, like, kind of communicate. And it also seems, it seems like it creates a good atmosphere. Like, they're all, like, one big community, and they're all very friendly with each other. And, you know, I think that's going to only be positive for the video game community as a whole. But, yeah, they're always usually fun little Easter eggs. I'm kind of thinking the more the merrier. Just as long as, like, what, you know, say it along the lines of what J-Money was saying, as long as it's not, like, a crutch to pad your game. Like, character swaps out, that would be good. I like those. Especially, and if you can balance it out, even better, you know? Yeah, that's what I got to say about that. I'm trying to think of a good example, and the only example I can think of was just that we were talking before the podcast, we got this question. I was talking about if anybody's ever seen, like, the Super Mario crossover or Super Mario crossover 2.0. Those were a couple of independent games that came out that retread the entirety of the first Mario NES game. And you could play as Mario, but you can also play as, like, Link or Alucard or Sophie from, like, Blaster Master, if anybody gets that. But they all had, like, their own unique movesets, but they were also tweaks. So they had their own movesets that were, you know, they were iconic to those characters. Like, Link had his downstep, and he was boomerangs. You know, Sophie was shooting, like a tank does. Mega Man had, like, extra powers. But they were all kind of, like, balanced and included in a way that made sense for, like, the Mario universe. So that's something that, like, indie developers would have to keep in mind. So, like, you can't have, like, another character come into your game and not have it make sense. Like, you couldn't have, like... I can't come up with an example fast enough. Like, you just could, like... action RPG person come into a platformer and just kind of leave it at that. You're going to have to, like, make sure you know to translate skills that were iconic to that character in a fair and balanced way that also would make sense with the mechanics of the game that you built up.
It would kind of be like what comes to mind is, like, putting, like, Shovel Knight into a 2D side-scrolling shooting game and have him shooting a gun or something. That would just kind of feel off. Because right. That's not what Shovel Knight does.
Right. No, but now if you had, like, Shovel Knight, he uses the fire rod. He can use the fire rod, but maybe he doesn't shoot as frequently. But he also has a shovel so you can get it in there and hit things at close range.
Right.
And he can, like, deflect something with a shovel. Because, like, I think, you can deflect projectile attacks with your shovel in Shovel Knight.
You can. You
do that. Or, you know, those are the suggestions. Sorry, I'm not a game developer. I can't do too much pressure. Justin, you got any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel similar to Game Money as far as, you know, if you, I don't mind crossovers. I think that's great. You know, as long as it's not, yeah, used as a crutch to, you know, developing your own, you know, unique content. Because there's still so much, you know, I mean, it's cool to have some of those kind of fan service things in games. I mean, Nintendo does it a lot. When you look at Smash Brothers, that's a big crossover compilation with Pac-Man, Sonic, and all that stuff. And they worked on, they had several different developers working on it, so that was a big collaborative effort. You know, having like your own unique game, I think there's something to be said with having your own unique graphics. Hey, we built this. We made this unique gameplay in our game. And, sure, we've incorporated some elements from some other games, but as long as it's more like Easter egg or unlockable content, things like that, you know, kind of as a supplement to the main gameplay, I'm fine with that.
And I also kind of want to think, you know, the more subtle, the better, unless you're going to aim for like a massive collaboration project.
Yeah.
Going back to Shovel Knight, one of the foreigners, I guess you want to call them, the foreign warriors that you find, he was like a wrestler kind of guy named Baz.
And yeah.
He originally just came from Divekick, which is an indie game where, you know, it was very popular for a little while. It was like you jump, you only had two buttons. You had jump and then dive kick, and that was it. And like Baz was like a featured character there. And they kind of like, you know, they communicated and they brought Baz over to Shovel Knight. But you notice that aside from the character model and the name Baz, they're not really mentioning dive kick at all. And that's just, you know, that's something that if you know the reference, then you get a little bit more out of it.
Right.
If you don't know the reference, you're not losing out on anything. So, you know, it's always good to keep it subtle, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm kind of, like, reminded of, like, the more I think about it, like, an example of not being subtle would be, like, kind of like those 90s, like, holiday specials or something like that. Like, I'm going to, like, I don't know if anybody's going to get this reference. If not, go look up some YouTube videos. But, like, every once in a while, they'll have, like, a variety hour show or something like that. And there'll be, like, a knock on the door. And, you know, one of the, you know, the hosts of the show will be like, I wonder who that could be. And, like, they open the door and they're like, oh no, hey, it's Jodie Foster. And, you know, here's the Beach Boys. And they'll, like, look into the camera like, if you have, like, a video game equivalent of that, you know, then that's no good to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have something subtle that I can figure out, if I did a little research, awesome, better.
Well, and if it's not subtle enough, it comes off forced, and it kind of like takes you out of the game experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I definitely agree that subtle's definitely better if you're gonna have some sort of crossover. Something like that in your game.
All right. I hope we adequately answered your question. Now, if any of you else heard that question and you're like, wow, how could I submit a question that's as great as that? Well, I'll tell you. You can email us at podcast@purenintendo.com, or you can leave a post on our Facebook group. Or you can also contact us through Twitter. We love getting new Twitter followers. You can check out our Twitter handles on our purenintendo.com. So yeah, if you have questions, there you go. Or you can leave a question in the comments below the next time we post up our KoopaCast that's on our main site. So without further ado, I think we will end this KoopaCast number 54. I want to thank you all for joining me, both audience members and, of course, the two Justins. Thank you very much for joining me. And we will see you in 2 weeks. See you all later.
See you guys.